MSW Media. Big shout out today to Helix Sleep. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match it to a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Monday, April 29th, 2024. Today, Joe Biden roasts Donald Trump at the White House Correspondents' Dinner amid a feud between the New York Times and the White House. A Kern County supervisor in California is under investigation for child sexual abuse. Harvey Weinstein has been hospitalized after his return to New York from prison. And Governor Kristi Noem faces backlash after admitting to shooting her dog. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Who shoots a dog?
Kristi Noem, apparently. And if there's anything that we learned that will bring this country together, it's you don't shoot puppies just because you hate them and they're not good hunting dogs.
So awful. Like, I hop onto social media and everyone's sharing pictures with their dogs. And I'm like, what's going on?
Pissing off all the cats because they're like, hey, we used to run this place. And thanks a lot, Kristi Noem.
She hasn't got around to shooting cats yet, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody who subscribed to my Substack. I'm going to go over one of my first articles about the Arizona fraudulent electors in the B block today. You can subscribe for free at MullerSheWrote.substack.com. Dana, I was like, when am I even going to fit in the fraudulent electors indictment? It's huge in Arizona. So that's when I'm going to do it. We'll also talk about some of the jabs Joe Biden took at Trump during the White House Correspondents' Dinner this past weekend. I got a lot of messages asking me if I was going. I wasn't there. I gave up my membership with the White House Correspondents' Association so I could raise money for Democrats this year. You cannot be a member of the White House Correspondents' Association and also fundraise for political campaigns.
You are wonderful.
So that's why I did that. But you also raised some money this weekend.
I did. Before I get to that, I want to say Colin Jost did an incredible job hosting the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And there was a really beautiful point where he actually got more serious and talked about his grandfather, who is like Staten Island firefighter. And you know, that's Trump country. He said, and it was his grandfather, I believe, said that he voted for Biden for the first time, but voted Democrat because he is a decent man. And it was just this really beautiful tear-jerking moment at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Colin was amazing.
He was.
I had an incredible gala on Saturday night for an organization called DIFA. And DIFA has given out $55 million in grants to local organizations in North Texas that help to raise awareness and education about HIV and AIDS. And so they keep bringing me in to tell some jokes and raise their money. And Saturday night, and you'll know this feeling, Allison, nothing could have gone better. Ugh. It was one of those nights that everything hit, the jokes hit, I raised, their goal was 150 and I raised close to $500,000. Huh. It was just one of those nights that everything was perfect. So I had a great weekend. I got to do my job, do it well, and it felt really, really fulfilling.
You looked amazing too. I saw your posts on social media.
Thank you. I should post probably a picture to the to our patron page on Facebook. That's a lot of peas picking up hot in the mic. I heard it happening. I was like, pickled peppers. Yeah, I'll start posting more pictures in there if the Beans patrons want to see them.
Oh, I bet they do. And you know, a really good friend of mine, I was with her. She did a pop-up on Thursday at Dining Out for Life, which I know nice. That you're familiar with. And they were able to raise a lot of money too. Not $500,000 or anything, but I love these organizations and I love that you're out there raising money for them. I think that that's so important and incredible. And I love those nights where everything's firing on all cylinders and it goes perfectly well, which is not what happened for Kristi Noem.
Oh, no, it did not.
This weekend. Talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I will. Before we get to the hot notes, this story, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, she has been considered to be a potential running mate for, unfortunately, Donald Trump. She addressed on Sunday the recent attention on her new book, where she writes very admittedly about killing her puppy and a goat. Now, in it, she tells the story of ill-fated Cricket. Now, Cricket was a 14-month-old puppy, a wired hair pointer. That's a puppy. She was training for pheasant hunting. Well, the backlash was swift, very swift, from all sides against the Republican governor. And on Sunday, she tried to do damage control. She addressed the issue on social media and said, "I can understand why some people are upset about a 20-year-old story of Cricket, one of the working dogs at our ranch, in my upcoming book. It's called No Going Back." She wrote that in a post on X, as we know that used to be Twitter, and went on to say, "The book is filled with many honest stories of my life, good and bad days, challenges, painful decisions, and lessons learned." Ugh. But when she went onto social media, because of the backlash, this firestorm, she basically was like, "Oh, and by the way, it's legal in South Dakota to kill an animal if it's not, if it, it looks like it's hurting." Like, she made up some bullshit about it to attacking other dog. Like, it started to roll into the point where, and I'm not kidding, like, Megyn Kelly and Tommy Lauren, who I hate speaking about, even they were like, you don't kill puppies.
Cat turd.
Yeah.
Cat turd, who ran over his dog. Cat turd was like, "There's no coming back from this." When you've lost cat turd.
Yeah, no shit.
I tweeted.
By the way, for those people that are like, "What? Who the fuck is cat turd?" It's a pseudonym. I guess you'd call it a pseudonym of someone's Twitter account.
Yeah, very famous Trump Twitter account, Trump MAGA Twitter account. In fact, I think that the Trump campaign actually takes advice from cat turd.
Of course.
I sent you a tweet. I composed a tweet over the weekend. I was like, "Should I tweet this?"
Oh, you're
like,
so
"Yes,
good.
Absolutely." I said, "Okay, so my editor says you shouldn't use the word lame here because it could be seen as ableist." And I respond, "Yeah, good catch. I'll be better about that." Christy Gnome's editor, "Do you really want to say you shot your dog?" And Christy Gnome saying, "Good catch. Let's switch it to puppy and add the goat."
Like, I mean, it's just a perfectly put together joke and tweet about a horrible human being. And please, for the listeners, know the only reason we are making light of this is because it's a horrifying story from a horrifying woman that may be the VP nominee for vice president of the United States.
Yeah, I think it shows the absolute chasm between the two parties. I mean, to not just for Christy Gnome to want to tell that story, having done it, but for editors and publishers and everyone else to be like, "Yeah, good idea."
Right. It was insane. I don't have an answer. And then for her to double down on social media, she just doesn't get it. So I do hope, no pun intended, but this buries her.
Yeah, I think it will. All right, we have a lot of news to get to. Let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right, first up from Roxanne Roberts at the Washington Post. There were about 2,600 people at Saturday's White House Correspondents Association dinner, but really, it came down to only two men, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Now, in one of his jokes, President Biden told the black tie crowd, "The 2024 election is in full swing, and yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old."
So good.
And then Colin Jost, who you said did an outstanding job, and I thought he did an outstanding job, he said, "Can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, 'All rise'?"
That was Colin, that's some great lines.
Now, Biden's own zingers were directed almost entirely at Donald Trump. "Trump's so desperate," he said, "he started reading those Bibles he's selling. Then he got to the first commandment, 'You shall have no other gods before me.' That's when he put it down and said, 'This book's not for me.'" But the president soon dispensed with the jokes and pivoted to what felt like a stump speech about the clear and present danger posed by Trump and his movement to democracy. He called on the journalists in the room to report truth over lies, and he implored them to move past the election horse race stories and focus on American democracy. He said the stakes couldn't be higher, and that was it, period. No punchline. Now, before the speeches, the White House Correspondents Association handed out its awards for excellence. The award for overall excellence went to Barak Ravid of Axios. Peter Baker of The Times received the print award for deadline reporting. And Tamara Keith of NPR received the broadcast award in the same category, all singled out for stories following Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel. Doug Mills of The Times got an award for visual journalism for the striking photo of Biden. And the award for courage and accountability went to the Washington Post for coverage of the impact of assault rifles and mass shootings. The evening ended, as it always does, with an impassioned defense of democracy and the critical role of the press that preserves it. Colin Jost had his own thoughts about the media, saying, "Your words speak truth to power. Your words bring light to the darkness." And then he paused and grinned and said, "And most importantly, your words train the AI programs that will soon replace you." Now, Biden ended with a toast of his own, and he said, "To a free press, to an informed citizenry, to an America where freedom and democracy endure. God bless America." So all in all, a great night, I thought. But New York Times didn't think so, did they?
Of course not. They've got a problem with Biden because he won't sit down with them. Just ridiculous. All right, AG, thank you so much for that story. This one's from Eli Stokels at Politico. When news broke one Saturday night in March of 2023 that President Biden's nominee to lead the Federal Aviation Administration was withdrawing, Mark Walker was the reporter on duty in the New York Times Washington Bureau. Assigned to write up the news, Walker asked the White House for a comment just before midnight. Assistant Press Secretary Abdullah Hassan was still up and emailed a quote, blaming the withdrawal on a barrage of, quote, unfounded Republican attacks. After going through edits, Walker's 502-word story was posted on the Times website in the wee hours of the Sunday morning. That's when all hell broke loose. Hassan, who has since left the White House, had offered the quote to Walker on background source to, and I quote, an administration official. Walker, not a member of the Times White House team, was unfamiliar with the protocol and had made an unintended mistake and attributed the quote to Hassan. When officials in the press shop called him Sunday morning about the mistake, they asked to speak with the White House editor, Elizabeth Kennedy. But the number he gave them was the cell phone of Elizabeth Buemiller. Elizabeth is the Times Washington bureau chief. Now, Buemiller, who was away from Washington visiting family, she received a call from Emily Simons. Emily's a White House deputy press secretary who had actually written the statement. Now, according to three people familiar with the conversation, Simons asked that Hassan's name be removed and the quote attributed to a nameless official. Now, Buemiller, who expressed dismay that the issue had been escalated to her level in the first place, was reluctant to alter a story that had already been online for over 12 hours. Both parties later told colleagues the call ended on a very sour note. Two Times staffers, so a couple staffers at the Times, recalled Buemiller grumbling, as she occasionally does, apparently, is known to do, about how she's been spoken to. Aides in the press shop recalled hearing that the bureau chief had been surprisingly defensive and that when Simons tried to bring up another concern with Walker's story, Buemiller just hung up. The following day, Principal Deputy Press Secretary Olivia Dalton emailed Buemiller asking the Times to reaffirm its commitment to abide by the administration's rules about information given on background. Well, for Dalton, Simons, and others, it was about ensuring fairness and embargoed information so that all news organizations could be on a level playing field. But the Times bureau chief never replied to that. In response, the White House removed all Times reporters from its, quote, tier one email list for background information about various briefings and other materials, a situation that wasn't resolved for 11 months. I'm trying to explain to you the beef between the Times and I think the Biden administration is what we're trying to lay out here. Now, the seemingly minor incident over sourcing that might have escalated or triggered such emotional responses on both sides, if not for tensions between the White House and the Times that had been bubbling beneath the surface for at least 5 years. Biden's closest aides had come to see the Times as arrogant, intent on setting its own rules and unwilling to give Biden his due. Inside the paper's DC bureau, the punitive response seemed to typify a press operation that was overly sensitive and determined to control coverage of the president. The Times' desire for a sit-down interview with Biden, I touched on this a second ago, by the newspaper's White House team is no secret around the West Wing or within the DC bureau. Getting the president on record with the paper of record is a top priority for publisher A.G. Sulzberger. So much so that last May, when Vice President Kamala Harris arrived at the newspaper's Midtown headquarters for an off-the-record meeting with around 40 Times journalists, Sulzberger devoted several minutes to asking her why Biden was still refusing to grant the paper or any major newspaper an interview. Harris, according to three people in the room that day, suggested that he contact the White House press office and later grumbled to aides about the back and forth being a waste of allotted time. But the pleas for an interview have gone nowhere. As Sulzberger often tells colleagues, and as he and Kahn have stressed in private conversations with the administration, every modern president since Franklin D. Roosevelt has done an interview with the Times. That, however, is an argument deemed uncompelling by Biden aides, and one that, to some White House officials, smacks of entitlement. And unfortunately, what the Times has been accused of, since he will not sit down with them, is this fucking childish decision to now write 100 stories about Biden being old. They're hammering his age for it.
Yep, they are. And this is a choice by the Biden administration as to who they talk to. I love that Biden sat down for an interview with Howard Stern after that Politico story dropped. And we should note, like you said, the morning after the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the New York Times ran a headline that said, on this Saturday night, Colin Jost's jokes fell flat. Like, just...
I mean, you know, he watched the whole thing and he was just seething and steaming and embarrassed.
It's just a feud now. It's just a huge feud because Biden is choosing different outlets to sit down for interviews with, ones that he thinks resonate better with the people. So anyway, that's where we're at. And we'll continue to see this feud between the Times and the White House. We'll report on it. Next up, from Jason Katowski at KGET, Kern County Supervisor, that's in California, Zach Scrivener, is being investigated on allegations that he sexually assaulted a preteen. And that's according to Sheriff Donnie Youngblood during a press conference Thursday afternoon. On Tuesday night, Youngblood said he received a call from District Attorney Cynthia Zimmer, Scrivener's aunt, saying she was concerned about him and he appeared to be having some type of psychotic episode and was armed with a gun. Youngblood sent a group of deputies to Scrivener's home and they learned he had been disarmed before the arrival. Now, once there, deputies learned Scrivener had been involved in a physical altercation with his children and was stabbed twice in the upper body. The altercation occurred over the sex assault allegations. This is what the sheriff said. And, you know, trigger warning for this, by the way. 30 guns, electronic devices, and psychedelic mushrooms were seized from the home. Youngblood said forensic studies will determine whether Scrivener was under the influence. There's a criminal protective order barring Scrivener from having contact with his children now. An investigation is ongoing. Charges have not yet been filed. And this case is being referred to the state attorney general's office. And the investigation may be taken over by the Tulare County Sheriff's Office. Scrivener's attorney, H.A. Sala, said late Thursday that he has a reasonable basis to believe the sex assault allegation is not reliable, not true, and didn't occur. He said he believes no corroborative evidence was seized from the home. The altercation leading to Scrivener being stabbed occurred during an effort to disarm him as he suffered a mental health crisis. Scrivener has been distraught over his pending divorce, he said. He stressed Scrivener never pointed a gun at or threatened to harm anyone else in the house. Scrivener, who's 50, has been on the Board of Supervisors for 14 years and has served in government offices most of his adult life. His wife filed for divorce in March. The couple have been married for 18 years and they separated in November, according to court records. They have four children. Zach Scrivener was elected to the Bakersfield City Council in 2004, representing Southwest Bakersfield Ward 7. For 7 years. So this is an ongoing story and an ongoing investigation, and we will keep you informed.
Thank you so much. And I just want to do a trigger warning on this just because we're talking about Weinstein. So if there's anyone that just, you know, can't with the story, I totally understand. It's not as in-depth as his case being overturned. This is more about his health. This is from the Associated Press. Harvey Weinstein's lawyer said Saturday that the one-time movie mogul, I hate that they call him that, has been hospitalized. I know it's true, but has been hospitalized for a battery of tests after his return to New York City following an appeals court ruling nullifying his 2020 rape conviction. And just remember, that is New York's rape conviction. Attorney Arthur Idala said Weinstein was moved to Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan after his arrival on Friday to city jails. Quote, they examined him and sent him to Bellevue. It seems as though he's in need of a lot of help physically. He's got a lot of problems. He's getting all kinds of tests. He's somewhat of a train wreck health-wise. That's what Idala said. A message left with the hospital was not immediately returned on Saturday. Frank Dwyer, who's a spokesperson with the New York City Department of Correction, said only that Weinstein remains in custody at Bellevue. Thomas Maley, a spokesperson for the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision, said Weinstein was turned over to the city's Department of Correction pursuant to the appeals ruling. Weinstein has been housed at the Mohawk Correctional Facility, about 100 miles northwest of Albany. On Thursday, the New York Court of Appeals, they vacated his conviction after concluding that a trial judge permitted jurors to see and hear too much evidence not directly related to the charges he faced, also erased his 23-year prison sentence and ordered a retrial. Prosecutors said they intend to try him on charges that he forcibly performed oral sex on a TV and film production assistant in 2006 and raped an aspiring actor in 2013. Weinstein remained in custody after the appeals ruling because he was convicted in Los Angeles of 2022 of another rape and was sentenced to 16 years in prison there. That's why I wanted to make very clear this was the case in New York being overturned. And for some time, Weinstein has been ailing with a variety of afflictions, including cardiac issues, diabetes, sleep apnea, and eye problems. I have zero empathy for this man. I'm sorry, but I don't. We're just reporting the news on this one. Adala said he spoke to Weinstein on Friday afternoon after he was in transit to New York City from an upstate jail less than 24 hours after the appeals court ruling, which was released Thursday morning. He said his client's ailments are physical, adding that mentally he is, quote, sharp as a tack, feet are firmly planted on the ground. So I don't love reporting these stories, any of them about Weinstein, but it is an important story right now. It affects a lot of survivors and a lot of people that were affected by his behaviors and crimes, as he has still been convicted in other states. So we will continue to cover this as it is appropriate so that you know what's going on.
Yeah. And Alyssa Milano wrote something really good, I think, for the Daily Beast about how this could impact survivors. And so if you're interested in reading that, head over to the Daily Beast and look for Alyssa Milano's piece. All right. We have a lot more news to get to. I'm going to go over the Arizona fraudulent electors indictment after this break, and then we'll follow it up with the good news. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. It's AG. You know I've always struggled with restless nights until I got my Helix mattress. Now I wake up feeling refreshed and ready for the day. It's the perfect balance of comfort and support tailored just for me. I love my Helix Sleep mattress. Just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. And you'll get 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Helix has redefined sleep comfort with its award-winning Luxe Collection and the luxurious new Elite Collection, taking sleep technology to the next level. Helix offers 20 different mattresses catering to every kind of sleeper, no matter what your sleep preference, from big and tall sleepers to our littlest dreamers. Helix even has a mattress with cooling technology so you can be comfortable no matter what season it is. Starting your journey to better sleep is easy. It's as easy as completing that Helix sleep quiz. In just 2 minutes, you'll find your perfect mattress match, and with a free doorstep delivery, Helix makes your decision even smoother. After taking the Helix sleep quiz, I was matched with the Helix Midnight. Now the whole world knows I'm a side sleeper and I prefer a medium firm mattress, and I have not ever had a better night's sleep than I do with my Helix mattress. Switching to this bed has been a game changer. The thought of going back to my old mattress is unimaginable. Helix's dedication to quality is backed by a 10 or 15 year warranty, depending on the model, and you get a 100 night in-home trial, giving you the confidence to test your mattress in your own home. Thanks to Helix, my nights have been transformed. I consistently enjoy the best sleep of my life. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control. Our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You might have heard me talk about on the Beans bonus episode for patrons this weekend, the weekly wrap-up, that there was so much news this week that I really didn't get a chance to fit in discussing the indictment of the Arizona electors. And so I started a Substack, and thank you all so much for subscribing. It's free to subscribe, MuellerSheWrote.substack.com. Within the first day, I reached bestseller status. So I've already got a little check mark by my name. I'm all excited. And so what I did was I wrote my thoughts on the indictment down in one of my articles on Substack. But I said that I would discuss it with you also on the Beans this week. So I'm going to read you my Substack article. And I really appreciate you all giving me a chance to talk about this indictment somewhere, because we couldn't fit it into the new Jack episode, which is out right now, where Andy and I discussed the Supreme Court, you know, immunity oral arguments, which were ridiculous. And also, we aren't going to have time on Cleanup on All 45 because we're going to be covering the trial of Donald Trump, which resumes today in a Manhattan courtroom. Actually, I think they're off today. But regardless, I really didn't have a place to put this. So I put it on Substack, and now I want to do this in a B block for you. And also, thank you again for subscribing to the Substack and reading the article. So if you've read it, you've heard this. But if you haven't, I'll convey it here to you now. It starts with me saying that this week was an historic one in the annals of justice. We knew ahead of time that a lot was happening. The $175 million Trump bond hearing, the start of the Trump 2016 election interference trial, the unsealing of the motion to compel addenda in the Trump espionage and obstruction case in Florida, the first Trump gag order contempt hearing. And it was just the Trump gag order contempt hearing, but now it's the first, because we have a second one scheduled for this week on Thursday. It was Wednesday, but it got moved to Thursday. And of course, we had the SCOTUS immunity arguments in the Trump 2020 election subversion case. We saw all of that coming. Aside from that, we also saw Trump named as an unindicted co-conspirator in 2 state cases, namely Michigan and Arizona, and we got to see the full fraudulent elector indictment in Arizona. And there was so much news this week that for the first time since I set up my $99 microphones at my kitchen table to document the Mueller investigation in 2017, I was literally unable to cover it all, even with 3 podcasts. So I'm breaking it down, and I'm going to do it here, the Arizona indictment. And I'm going to do it on Monday's Daily Beans podcast as well. And that's what I'm doing here. So, ooh, cross-reference, a little bit weird. It's like looking in an infinity mirror. Explicit lyrics warning, I say, because I do swear a little bit in this particular post. The indictment lists 18 co-conspirators. 11 of them are fraudulent electors, and 7 redacted names. The Washington Post has confirmed that the redacted names are Christina Bobb, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, Mike Roman, John Eastman, Mark Meadows, and Boris Epstein. It appears they've all been hit with 9 felonies. Conspiracy, fraudulent schemes and artifices, fraudulent schemes and practices, and 6 counts of forgery. The first 12 pages outline the counts and who's charged with them. So let's jump to page 13 with the actual scheme. Now keep in mind, the Republican Attorney General in 2021, Mark Brnovich, refused to investigate this. Chris Mays, the new Attorney General as of 2022, comes out swinging, saying that Biden won in 2020 and MAGA couldn't cope, so they conspired to keep unindicted co-conspirator 1 in office. And now it's clear to us that unindicted co-conspirator 1 is Trump. depriving Arizonans of their right to vote and have their vote counted. And that language mirrors the language in Jack Smith's indictment of Donald Trump under Title 18 U.S. Code 241, Conspiracy Against Rights. In that case, it was the conspiracy against voters to have their votes counted. And that's huge, right? That language mirror that we're seeing between these two indictments. Now, according to the Arizona indictment, the co-conspirators signed elector certificates calling themselves the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States from the state of Arizona. And they did that knowing full well that the Biden electors had already been certified by the state. Further, they used known lies of election fraud to further their scheme, and they deceived Arizonans by claiming they were only contingent electors. Trouble is, there's a mountain of evidence showing that they were actually planning to use these certificates to push Pence to throw out the legal votes, regardless of the outcome of the legal battles. We've long heard about the contingency language. In Pennsylvania and New Mexico, they submitted fraudulent slates of electors too for Donald Trump and Pence, but they actually insisted on including the contingency language in their documents. And that's probably why we haven't seen charges in those states. So there are, in this indictment, a total of 5 unindicted co-conspirators. This is in the charging document handed up by the grand jury. And here's how they're described in the indictment and who I think they are. Unindicted co-conspirator 1 is a former president of the United States who spread false claims of election fraud following the 2020 election. Obviously, that's Donald Trump. Unindicted co-conspirator 2, a former member of the Arizona legislature who spread false claims of election fraud following the 2020 election. Unindicted co-conspirator 2 helped organize and distribute a false document on December 14th, 2020, entitled Joint Resolution of the 54th Legislature, unquote. Now, based on clues in the indictment, I believe this to be former state senator Kelly Townsend. Now, she was also subpoenaed and spoke to the FBI in the Jack Smith federal case. Unindicted co-conspirator 3, a former member of the Arizona legislature who spread false claims of election fraud following the 2020 election. Unindicted co-conspirator 3 helped organize a quote-unquote hearing at a hotel in Phoenix on November 30th, 2020 that both and 21 attended. Unindicted co-conspirator 3 additionally signed the false December 14th, 2020 joint resolution of the 54th legislature. Now, I'm certain that this is Mark Fincham. He was at the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, on January 6th, and he's been hit with a shitload of sanctions for all of his bogus lawsuits with Carrie Lake, and it's fascinating to me that he may be cooperating after all of his public bullshit. Unindicted co-conspirator 4, an attorney for the Trump campaign who drafted memos that encouraged having the fake Republican electors vote on December 14th, 2020. Unindicted co-conspirator 4 helped plan and organize the fake electors vote on December 14th in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Nevada, New Mexico, and Wisconsin. Now, I'm about 99% sure this is the cheese, Kenneth Chesbro. We know he's been kind of cooperating in several state cases, and he's an unindicted co-conspirator in the federal indictment as well. And then unindicted co-conspirator 5, an Arizona attorney who worked for the Trump campaign. Unindicted co-conspirator 5 helped organize the Arizona Republican electors vote on December 14th, 2020, and previously represented the Republican Party and Kelly Ward in a lawsuit against the certified Arizona Democrat electors. So this is definitely Jake Wilinchik. Now, he was part of several bullshit lawsuits, including that one with the Republican Party and Kelly Ward. And he was also part of the Crazy Times Carnival Cyber Ninja audit in Arizona. And I call it the Crazy Times Carnival Cyber Ninja audit because it took place at the Vets Memorial Coliseum while something called the Crazy Times Carnival was going on. I thought that was apropos. Now, I'm assuming that Chris Mayes didn't indict Trump here yet because she's either waiting to see who flips and rolls or she's waiting to see how the Supreme Court rules on Trump's immunity. I'm also wondering where Sidney Powell and Ginny Thomas are. Sidney Powell was an integral part of the fraudulent elector scheme and was indicted in Fulton County, as well as making an appearance as an unindicted co-conspirator in the federal indictment, but no mention here. And Ginny Thomas sent messages to 29 legislators in November and December in Arizona, repeating the bullshit script calling on the lawmakers to fight back against fraud and exercise what's described as a constitutional authority to unilaterally choose a clean slate of presidential electors. So where's she? And why the hell is her husband hearing immunity arguments about the fraudulent slates in the first place? And what happened to the two current Arizona legislators? What's going to happen to them? They've been indicted, Senator Anthony Kern and Senator Jake Huffman. I doubt they'll have the decency to resign. And an expulsion in the Arizona Senate requires a two-thirds vote. And with the balance of power at 16 to 14 for the GOP, they're two seats ahead. I doubt they'll get the votes needed to oust two of their members. But all 30 seats are up for re-election this year. With abortion on the ballot, we could see a changing of the guard. But perhaps I say the piece de resistance of irony, indictee Christina Bobb. She is currently the head of election integrity for the Republican National Committee. You may remember her from her starring role in the obstruction of justice at Mar-a-Lago when she signed an attestation saying that all the classified documents had been returned pursuant to a subpoena. A pillar of integrity. And then I link to the indictment in the article. You can read it if you head to millershewrote.substack.com. You can read this article, and then there's also a link there where you can read the entire indictment of the Arizona electors, plus seven others. 18 people total. That's pretty close to how many were indicted down in Fulton County. So thank you again so much, everybody. And we have a lot of good news to get to, but we have to take another quick break. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control, our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news?
Good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Mutt, Cat Me If You Can, Opine on the Bovine, What the Hequine, What's the Model of Your Oxalotl, What the Fark is in Your Ark, or just send us your pod pet tax photos, you can do that at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. If you don't have a pod pet, you can send us an adoptable pet in your area or give a shout out to that, you know, your local shelter or a loved one or another small business in your area. Self shout outs are always welcome. We love to hear what you're doing. And of course, if you have anything like thesis titles or dissertation titles, or if you have a great story about student debt forgiveness, we'd love to hear about that too. You can send us baby pictures. Dana loves baby. I love baby pictures too. I don't want you to think I don't love baby pictures.
She does.
But Dana like really loves baby pictures.
And of all species,
animal, like pictures human, of frogs. Yeah. So send that all to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. All right. First up from Cindy, pronouns she and her. First of all, thanks AG and DG and all the people behind the scenes at the Beans. I'm so grateful to have you in my ears every morning. This is a self shout out as I'm about to take on a big challenge. Little background. For the past 35 years, I've worked for a company that manufactures the shorthand machines used by court reporters and develops the software that court reporters use to produce transcripts. I've been training our customers to use our software to help them improve their accuracy and make it faster and easier to produce real-time transcription on the fly with a human brain versus an automatic speech recognition engine. The technology is improving, but still not as good as humans for the critical work. I train in person at conferences and via online webinars at a private community I developed. I've written books, put on weekly a weekly tips column, teach a weekly open Q&A session via Zoom. I've taught thousands of court reporters throughout the U.S. and other parts of the English-speaking world, including at the U.S. House and Senate and Parliament in Australia. I have learned virtually everything involved with supporting this profession, except for one thing: how to write at the speeds the court reporters do. As a teacher, I can write just enough to demonstrate various software features, but I couldn't actually do their job. Well, the thing that's most important in effective teaching is empathy. So at the tender age of 61, I'm going to be starting court reporting school as a student in August. I figure if I crash and burn, at least I will have tried and understand the challenge better. If I can make it part or most of the way through, I'll be able to create much better sample files for my courses. And if I can go all the way and actually become a certified court reporter, you have to have a minimum of 225 words per minute with four voices.
Wow.
Well, then I'll have the skills for a new career when I'm ready to retire from teaching. So wish me luck. For PodBet Tax, I submit two of my best pals, my friend Jake, who is great at taking goofy selfies, my mischievous boy Bob, who thinks my shoulders make a great cat tree, and the last shot is me with my newest great niece when I met her at Christmas last year.
Oh my goodness. Okay. First of all, Cindy, baby picture, because it's the first one up. Absolutely perfect. And this horse selfie, I don't even know what to say about it.
I love Cindy's horse selfies. And by the way, Cindy, I follow you on social media. I love all your posts that you do and all the photos of all your happy places. This is so cool that you're going to court reporting school. But you're such an accomplished, you know, you're so accomplished in the field already. I think this is amazing. So I can't wait to hear how it goes.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. This next one's from Lynn, pronouns she and her. Hello, AG and DG. Ever since Allison mentioned writing in with good news stories about how democratic programs have helped us, I've been thinking about writing in to tell you my own story. After listening to the story last week from the listener who wrote about how Social Security survivor benefits helped her and her sister after their parents died when they were very young, I finally decided to do it. I grew up in a single-parent household. My mom had an eighth-grade education and worked in a garment factory. I went to Head Start the summer before I started first grade. My family was often on food stamps, now called SNAP, and I got free school lunches. When I was almost 11, my six-month-old sister got very sick. She was in the hospital for a month, and when she came home with severe brain damage, she could not walk, talk, or see. My mom was not able to work outside the home because my sister often got sick. Although my dad sent a couple of $100s of child support every month, it was not nearly enough for us to live on. Thankfully, there was Social Security disability benefits, which my sister qualified for. When I was 19 and in college and she was 9, our dad died and she began collecting Social Security survivor benefits instead of SSI. And since she was permanently disabled, she collected until she died when she was 28. I also qualified for Pell Grants when I was in college, back when it was a true grant program and not a government-backed loan. I often told people that I am a Democrat because growing up, I benefited from numerous Democratic, capital D, enacted programs. And like the listener who wrote in, I've never begrudged a penny of Social Security or other taxes I have paid in my almost 40-year career. I have empathy for those less fortunate because 55-plus years ago, that was me. and I believe in paying it forward. I've attached a picture of me when I was 3 months old, so it was taken almost exactly 61 years ago. Keep doing what you do, including dropping the F-bombs when you read the news. We can't count on SCOTUS or any other judge to save us from a second Trump administration. It's up to us, the Leguminati. We are cavalry, and that is going to save our democracy.
Awesome. We're the cavalry.
I love the story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Look at the baby photo. Oh, so adorable. Lynn, incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing it. Next up, Mama Pajama, pronouns she and her. Dear Sweet Beans, I have two shout outs, so I'll try to be succinct. A VA story. Many people don't know how important VA hospitals are for training medical professionals. Oh, Mama Pajama, I love you for this. I spent years learning at the Audie Murphy VA in San Antonio and the Zablocki VA in Milwaukee. Among others, it was an honor to care for service members and learn so much more than just medicine. I was in training in the last century, ha ha ha, so many of my patients had been in World War II. The experience gave me enormous context for the concept of true service. I'm filled with gratitude for our veterans in the VA system. Now here's the second part. I'm going to mother you for a minute. I'm worried about how hard you're working, especially AG. Mm-hmm. Three podcasts for which you are amazingly prepared, newsletters, personal appearances, and Dana zipping around the country doing fundraisers. Exhausting. Sweeties, please take care of yourselves. You know the routine. Sleep, nourishment, sunshine, wear your sunscreen, exercise, and mental peace. For my pod pet tax, here's a gif of my dear late dog, Luna, aka Lunatic, Loopers, Looney, and Lulu, getting ready to run on the farm. Good times. All my best to you and the other beans. You are my mental lifeline since I'm a tiny blue dot in a not so metaphorically red state. And it's a comfort knowing there is kindness and sanity out there. So thank you. It feels like we've been through so much together. Oh,
this yeah. is so sweet.
I promise I will take more walks in the sunshine.
Yeah. Mama Pajama, I want you to know that when I'm on the road, because of my mental health, I get up and I try and work out every day. And sometimes when I land in the afternoon, I'll just change and walk on the treadmill. I try and eat well. I don't drink a lot. It's one of those things that I try very hard to take care of myself while I'm on the road. So even though it doesn't assuage your maybe concerns, just know that AG and I do the best we can. I worry more about AG than I do myself because she's juggling a lot. Mm. Yeah, a lot.
I'll do better. I promise.
Okay. This one's from Brian, pronouns he and him. Hello, Beans Queens. Longtime listener from San Diego who had a beer with AG once upon a time. I think we've heard about this, Brian. I'm writing to share some good news. As an inventor and a small business owner who manufactures in the U.S. and pays living wages, it has always been challenging to make a decent living. After struggling as a business for years, in January, I did a major refresh on our operations team. Thankfully, I found a couple of rock stars named Chris and Coleman, who have been instrumental in helping to rebuild my business, Dog Hook and E-Bike Cargo, from the ground up into viable and soon to be profitable businesses. To celebrate, we're throwing an event in North Park on August 10th called the Disaster Relief Trails and Resilience Fair. There's going to be a link in the show notes to this. My pet tax, by the way, picks of Otis, who is two now and the friendliest. Mm. Yep, cutest and most lovable creature imaginable. Thank you all for what you do, and I hope to see you soon.
I remember this bike, and I remember that beer. I think we went to Thorn Street, Brian. Really good to see these photos, and really great to hear about your refresh. I'm looking forward to that. I'll see if I'm in town on August 10th. I may not be. I may be on the road, but I'll see if I can make it by. All right, next up from Peggy, pronouns she and her. 2 weeks ago, I got to see the Sexy Liberal Show in Minneapolis. Last weekend, I got to meet so many fellow Beans listeners at the meetup in DC, and it's done my heart good. For Pod Pet Tax, here's a picture of my own Nigerian dwarf goats. His name is Greg, one of them.
Oh my God, so cute.
Greg the goat. Adorbs. You want me to take this last one too?
Yeah, close us out today.
All right, here we go from Jean, pronouns she and her. Hello, Beans. You asked for good news about government programs and agencies. I'd like to shout out the IRS. Yes, really. During my husband's last and fatal illness, I had heavy expenses for long-term care and therefore was owed a large income tax refund for 2020, which never arrived. I called the IRS repeatedly, But even when I got through, I received different information every time. After passage of the Inflation Relief Act, Inflation Reduction Act, I tried again in 2023 and got through right away to a Ms. Johnson, who referred me to the Taxpayer Advocate Office. Carlos at that office found the problem right away, and within a month, I received a check for the refund plus interest. I had heard the IRS was now able to collect owed taxes from billionaires, but it's also now able to help the rest of us too. For pet tax, this is my sister-in-law's new rescue dog, Coco. No DNA, but it says she's a terrier poodle, a troodle. It looks like a terrier poodle, doesn't it?
Oh my goodness, it's so cute.
Adorable baby, and I love the little orange ears on the white dog. Well, that's incredible. I'm so glad now that it's easier to get through to the IRS. Their website is up now, so you can file your taxes for free using their software, which I think is incredible and an important program. Thanks, Elizabeth Warren. Woohoo! And that's a really great shout out. A lot of us don't think to shout out the IRS, but that's wonderful. So I'm glad that you were finally able to get your check and get through on the phone and get the help that you needed from the Taxpayer Advocate Office. All right, that's the good news for today. We really, really thank you for sending it in. Please send us all your good news, even if you don't think it's important. I promise you that it is.
Absolutely.
Send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Do you have any final thoughts, my friend? Maybe a little bit more color on the Dallas sitch and your amazing fundraising?
Sure. The other thing that this organization, what this DIFA is, it's called the House of. So if you think about Pose, like the House of whatever, and this was the House of Royalty, and it's a fashion show every year. So like, I'm walking down this massive runway, there's 1,100 people in the room, and I do my thing, make them laugh, raise all the money, and then there's this incredible fashion show. And oh, this is actually a good part of it that I want to tell you. One of the organizations that DIFA supports helps support a girl named Bella. Bella is still living in a homeless shelter and is putting herself through high school and is studying to be a designer. And I got to meet Bella and bring Bella out on stage. And Bella designed this incredible dress that one of the models were wearing. And it was just such a beautiful moment to actually see, because I know where the money goes that I raise, but to actually see someone who was affected by it. And I just fell in love with her and she fell in love with me. And I'm sure we're going to stay in touch. She's an incredible young lady. So I know that this may never reach her, but just a shout out to Bella and thank you for sharing the stage with me. You're phenomenal. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Oh, I love that so much. Thank you. And we'll be back in your ears tomorrow, everybody. Also, there's a new episode of the Jack Podcast out. And I think one of the funniest moments was when I asked Andy McCabe, you know, because during the Supreme Court oral arguments, Dana, Alito, who we know and love, Alito was trying to get Dreeben to give him just one example, you know, because he thinks that if we don't give the president immunity, there's going to be these rogue prosecutors that just come out of the woodwork and start indicting all the ex-presidents, which has never happened in our 200 years, but whatever. So he was trying to get Dreeben to just give me one example of a rogue prosecutor that couldn't get a grand jury to indict, mm-hmm. you know, because the whole adage that you can indict a ham sandwich. And I was like, hey, Andy, do you know anybody that couldn't get indicted by a grand jury from a rogue prosecutor? And he was like, yeah, I do. Me. And we talked about it for a while. Because if you remember, Bill Barr tried to get him indicted for like 2 years and couldn't. And then went to a second grand jury and couldn't get them to indict Andy McCabe either. So yeah. The protections are there, Sam Alito, in case you were wondering. And so you can listen to that whole conversation on this episode of Jack. It's out now wherever you get your pods. And thank you very much. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health, take care of your family, vote blue over Q.
And take all that family with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
MSW Media.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.